Hi, my name is Brian Hornbuckle. I'm at Iowa State University. I'm going to be talking about soil surface roughness measurements that we made during SMATFEX 16 Iowa. You've already heard a little bit about. Victoria Walker is a graduate student that I work with at Iowa State, and I'd especially like to acknowledge the team at the University of Iowa that I worked with. Vivian Wallace is an undergraduate in geology. Bill Eichinger is a faculty member there, and Ennis is a graduate student. So SMAP was launched in early 2015. It's making observations of what we call near-surface soil moisture. And it followed a satellite called SMOS that was launched by the European Space Agency in late 2009, which is doing the same thing. And when SMOS and SMAP are microwave remote sensing satellites that are measuring what we call L-band, or wavelength of about 21 centimeters. And I want to particularly highlight this fact because it's different than many the remote sensing techniques that you may be more familiar with. So microwaves have longer wavelengths than visible infrared, and that has a big consequence. And that's the fact that the vegetation canopy is semi-transparent. We can see through it. And so these measurements that we're making with SMOS and SMAP at the L-band frequency in the microwave region can see through vegetation and into the soil. So it's an integrated soil measurement. It's not a surface measurement. And when I talk about soil moisture, what I mean is the volumetric water content of the top 5 centimeters of the soil surface. The spatial resolution is rather poor. Also, if you're used to other types of remote sensing measurements, it's about 40 kilometers, which in Iowa would be about the size of a county there. But this is a very relevant scale if we want to look at global water cycles. And the temporal resolution in the U.S. Midwest is about every other day. And then just some basic physics here about microwave remote sensing. Again, SMOS and SMAPs are radiometers, or passive microwave remote sensors, and they're measuring the emission of microwave energy that's coming from Earth's land surface. It's naturally emitted by Earth's land surface. It's listening to this radiation. And when the soil is dry, this emission is rather high. But when the soil becomes wet, the emissivity decreases and the emission decreases. So the signal is, as the measurements go down, soil moisture is going up. So you might, you've seen some of this information already, but I want to review how are SMOS and SMAP performing in the Corn Belt of the Midwest U.S. We made this assessment with an in-situ network that's been established in the South Fork that Mike Kosh introduced previously. There are 20 in-situ sites here in about a 36-kilometer area. At each in-situ site, we have taping buckets and also sensors that are buried in the ground. And as Mike pointed out, the permanent stations, which we'll all be using in this analysis, are installed outside of fields where what we really want to know is what's happening inside of the field. So as Ole mentioned, there's important to think about this, how what kind of differences there are and how we scale these measurements up to match this 36-kilometer footprint of SMOS and SMAP. The goal for SMOS and SMAP is to not have a bias, in other words, not to be too dry or too wet, and to have about a 4% uncertainty. And so what I'm going to be showing here is comparisons between on-the-ground soil moisture made by this in-situ network in the South Fork. And on the vertical axis here, this would be the satellite soil moisture. And I'm looking at, again, the volumetric water content in percent. If we look at SMOS, it's too dry by about 9%, according to the data that we're using here. And the uncertainty is a little bit higher than what we'd like to see, for 5% as opposed to 4%. And if we look at SMAP, it's also too dry, again, about 9% by the data I'm using here. And its uncertainty is a little bit higher. Why is this happening? Well, we've investigated several hypotheses. It doesn't have to do with this mismatch between in-situ sensors and what satellites are seeing, that Peter was talking about. It doesn't have to do with anthropogenic noise that might be coming from airport radars. It doesn't have to do with input temperature that's coming from weather models to interpret the measurements made by SMOSIS MAP. We need to know what the on-the-ground temperature is. And it's not the wrong soil type. What it might be is soil surface roughness. And why do I say that soil surface roughness might be the culprit here? Well, here is some simple model results to illustrate how soil surface roughness, which I define as the millimeter scale change in elevation of the soil surface, so it's the microtopography of the soil surface, how does that affect the microwave emission? So on the figure here, I have volumetric soil water content on the horizontal axis in cubic meters per cubic meter, and on the vertical axis here is the microwave emission in terms of the signal that's measured, what we call brightness temperature in kelvins. And the black line here is the relationship between the microwave emission and volumetric water content for a smooth soil surface. You can see that, again, as volumetric water content increases, the microwave emission goes down. That's the signal. Now, as we roughen the soil surface, or at least in this model, the blue line and the red line is a rough soil surface. The red line would be a rougher soil surface. You can see that the emission goes up at each volumetric water content. So what happens if we have greater soil surface roughness? The soil emission increases, and this is in the right direction to correct for this dry bias, because we need to make SMOSIS MAP think that the emission is higher so that they increase the volumetric water content to bring that back down to measurements. Here's another reason why we think that soil surface roughness might be contributing to the problem. So what I have here on the left-hand side is a vegetation parameter that's also retrieved by SMOS and SMAP. Now, SMOS and SMAP are basically equally sensitive to soil moisture as they are to vegetation water, the water contained in vegetation. So it's something that you have to account for if you're going to interpret SMOS and SMAP measurements. SMOS and SMAP can also retrieve this parameter. It's known as the tau parameter. And it has some characteristic features that are familiar. So I'd like you to look at the green box here. So on the left-hand side, again, I have day of year 2015 on the horizontal axis. On the vertical axis is this vegetation parameter. And if you look at the green box, during the growing season, this vegetation parameter increases as crops grow in the Midwest, and then it decreases as they lose their moisture as they senesce. That looks familiar. But if you look outside of the growing season, in the early part of the year and the late part of the year, this vegetation parameter is also high. And in the spring, this vegetation parameter decreases. And what's happening in Iowa, where this data is coming from, is that there's nothing growing during this time when this tau parameter, vegetation parameter, is changing. So what we believe is happening is that soil surface roughness, illustrated here, again, at the beginning of the season, increases as farmers work in the field. It decreases after that as it rains and smooths out the soil, erodes the soil. And then after harvest, farmers go back in and prepare the fields for the next year. The soil roughness increases. So our conceptual understanding of this vegetation parameter is that it includes both vegetation and soil surface roughness effects, and we can see that in the data, where in the first part of the year, soil surface roughness is high and decreases as rainfall erodes the soil surface. Then annual crops are planted and they grow and senesce, and then soil surface roughness increases again at the end of the year. So one of the goals of SMAPVEX-16 Iowa was to make some measurements of this phenomenon to see if soil surface roughness was, in fact, to get some on-the-ground measurements of soil surface roughness. And these are made during what we call the first intensive operation period, or IOP1, that occurred from May 25th to June 5th of this year. And here are some of the measurements we used to characterize soil surface roughness. We had three methods. We used a grid board, which we'd set into the ground, and then take a picture. And from that picture, we will be retrieving the profile of the soil surface. Then we used also a pin board set on the ground. The pins are free moving. Take a picture, and we're currently analyzing that data to retrieve soil surface roughness. And then finally, what I'll be talking about today are our initial results from a LIDAR system that was mounted on a tripod. So on top of the tripod here, you see a laser rangefinder. Basically, we're calling it a LIDAR, pointing at the ground where we'd scan the ground. We would make these measurements at two different spots. And the white stuff you see on the ground there is literally baking flour. We found that the soil surface roughness was not reflective enough for the laser. So we had to go out, buy some baking flour, bring it, and sift it on the ground to make the soil surface more reflective. We were able to make three scans, both across the row and parallel to the row with the LIDAR, and we would do this in two spots in the field. We'd like to have done more, but we were trying to balance covering the entire domain of the experiment. And we were eventually able to get to 20 different sites and make measurements at of these type 3 measurements at all of those 20 different sites. And here is an example of the raw data for one site. This is for a maize field or corn field, and this is data for looking across row direction or perpendicular to row direction. So on the top, on the vertical axis, is the elevation in meters. Again, the microtopography of the soil surface, and the horizontal axis is horizontal distance from the tripod. So we were able to cover about a 5-meter transect there. On the bottom figure, it's autocorrelation, and then the horizontal axis here is lag distance. And the LIDAR was had about a 1 millimeter spot size or footprint, and these measurements were made at about a 2.5 millimeter separation. If you take a look at the autocorrelation on the bottom, again, autocorrelation is how similar are different points separated by different spacings or lags. You can see that the autocorrelation drops, but then comes back up again at about 0.75 meters. That's significant because we have 30-inch row spacings in Iowa. We made these measurements, again, at 20 different sites over a large domain. Here are the clay fractions for the domain. There's not much variation in clay. And here's sand. Even though it looks like it's more variable in sand, there's really only about 5% difference, so there's really not much difference in terms of spatial variability. Here is what we have initially measured with the LIDAR in terms of soil surface roughness. So on the horizontal axis here is day of year 2016. This is about a 10-day experiment, and on the vertical axis is how we characterize soil surface roughness. This is the standard deviation of soil surface height in meters. The blue circles are perpendicular to row direction, and the red stars are parallel to row direction. And you can see that there's not much change over the period of the experiment. And we also made some some measurements at the same sites at the beginning, at the end. Again, not much change. And this is actually expected because here again I'm highlighting this vegetation parameter that also corresponds to soil surface roughness. Our experiment happened to hit right at that time where this vegetation parameter is at its lowest point and where it's not changing very much, and so it's not surprising to see our soil surface roughness measurements that are pretty constant. In summary, SMASS and SMOP are too dry in the U.S. Corn Belt. Changes in surface soil moisture are significant but currently neglected by the model because it's a complicated thing. It's not something we expected we need to do, but it looks like it's something we need to take into account. We made some soil surface roughness measurements during SMAPVEC 16 Iowa. There are no large temporal changes in surface roughness that we observed, but it's not surprising given the time of the experiment where changes in soil surface roughness are probably small. But it turns out that roughness is likely not the only reason why SMAP and SMOS are too dry, and there's some other things that we're investigating to find out. Thank you.
Any questions?
So just briefly, you might have alluded to this, but it's paramount site selection
Yeah, I need to apologize. We don't have the uncertainty on there yet. I just got this data very recently, but we're not expecting the uncertainty to change our conclusions here, that there's not much. There's maybe a slight downward trend. Also, we need to investigate this kind of spurious point up here at the end. But it's kind of a small change in social disruptiveness, but again, it's expected for this time of the year, but based on what we're seeing from satellite.
And even among the sites, do you have enough range there to compare to the inaccuracy of this map among those same sites?
Well, SMAP right now doesn't produce a soil surface roughness measurement. We're hoping to retrieve one from what SMAP is measuring, so there's nothing to compare at this time right now.
Okay, just a quick question. We don't have...
In comparison between the different two products, satellite product with the soil moisture sensing, you're assuming that the soil moisture sensing is the truth. That's why you're telling me. But they have also the accuracy there. How do you account for that?
What is the truth? Is all I will say. There can be consistency between measurements, and that's what we need to find. But what is the true? What is the true soil moisture of a SMAP, SMOS pixel? Who really knows?
Thanks, Brian.